the documents show very clearly that Mr. Symington came back on this committee to try and wreck our attempts to expose communists who had infiltrated his administration. In common decency, Mr. Chairman, in common honesty, he should have given these facts to this committee. He can't conceivably sit here as a fair judge.
That was Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin, the greatest actor in the greatest play that the Congressional Theater has ever presented. The year is 1954. The place, the Senate Caucus Room on the third floor of the Senate Office Building, Washington, D.C. The audience, an estimated 20 million American television viewers. A play that ran for 36 performances, a standing room sellout every time. Listen again.
Mr. Let me answer the question now.
Just a minute.
I'm trying to answer it. You interrupt me.
Just a moment. The chair's interrupting.
My name is H.V. Kaltenborn. The voice you just heard was the voice of Dave Beck before a Senate investigating committee. In its long history, Congress has investigated practically everything. But the sound record of its proceedings is comparatively new. It remains for the post-World War era to give us a cross-section of the great variety of investigations that has taken place for almost two centuries. Just the names are different. Congress has always investigated war, crime, espionage, government contracts. More recently, it has investigated subversion and un-American activities.
Are you a member of the Communist Party? Or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
It's unfortunate and tragic that I have to teach this committee the basic principles of America.
That's not the question. The question is, have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
I'm framing my answer in the only way in which any American citizen can frame his
then
answer
you deny,
to the question
then
which
you,
invades his, absolutely invades
then
his
you
right.
deny, you refuse to answer that question, is that correct?
I have told you that I will offer my beliefs, my affiliations, and
here's the witness, the American public,
and they will know where I stand, as they do from what I have witnessed.
Stand away
from
the stand.
I have for Americanism for many years, and I...
Stand away from the stand.
...for the Bill of Rights, which you are trying to destroy.
Take this man away from the stand.
That was John Lawson, one of the 10 writers and directors who in the year 1948 refused to testify under oath whether he was a communist. That same year, the most famous of communist investigations reached a climax. The dramatic meeting between Alger Hiss and Whitaker Chambers. Hiss, a former high State Department official, denied he was the man using the name George Carlson, who passed secret State Department documents to Whitaker Chambers when Chambers was a member of the Communist Party. Here is the actual identification by Chambers in a Senate committee room.
Mr. Hiss, would you kindly stand up, please?
Chambers, would you stand up?
Have you ever seen this individual who is standing?
I have.
Do you know him?
I identify him as Mr.
As who?
As George Frost.
After two trials, Hiss was convicted of perjury. The jury believed Chambers. Congressional committees also probed dealings between the government and civilian contracting firms. One of the most famous investigations took place a few years ago when a Senate committee looked into the circumstances surrounding the building of a flying boat by the famed industrialist Howard Hughes. The government was putting up the money. Hughes was building the machine. Hughes objected to the procedure that would not permit him to know in advance the questions that the senators would ask. As in many investigations, tempers were at the breaking point for both the witness and the senators.
Yesterday you told me I would be accorded the same privilege as the senator from Maine or anyone else here. Now, will you give me the question in advance that you want to ask me while I am here? Or will you give them to any third neutral party? Is it not true that you are going to propound the questions for me as I testify and based upon what I testify as I go along? Are you willing to set aside the questions in advance which you will ask me?
Congressional inquiries often become open battles between personalities, particularly since the advent of radio and television, when a whole nation has a front row seat. The reasons for the investigation become secondary, as interrogators and witnesses dart, feint, probe, taunt, play for a laugh, and exasperate. It is a contest. Who will outlast or outscore the other? It's June 1958. On the stand, the head of the powerful Teamsters Union, James J. Hoffa, asking the questions, Senate Special Counsel Robert Kennedy.
Mr. Hoffa, did you know Mr. Joseph Holtzman?
Yes, I do. I did.
Yeah. He was a close friend of yours, was he?
I knew Joe Holtzman.
He was a close friend of yours?
I knew Joe Holtzman.
He was a close friend of yours?
I knew Joe Holtzman.
The record you are playing is not broken. You are hearing a contest. Throughout this album, you will hear many such contests. They are the dramatic moments that often take the headlines away from the great work many congressional committees perform. Listen again.
He was a close friend of yours?
Just a moment. I knew Joe Holtzman. He wasn't any particular friend of mine.
The United States public had a congressional investigation brought into its homes. The Kefauver Committee, under the chairmanship of Senator Estes Kefauver of Tennessee, had been investigating crime in the United States for nearly a year. Now, in March, the investigation moved to New York. High drama would soon follow. For the American public, through television and radio, would occupy a front row seat at this investigation. The two main players in the proceedings, Frank Costello, reputed lord of the underworld, and William O'Dwyer, former brigadier general, former New York mayor, and now United States ambassador to Mexico.
Senator Toby, do you want to say anything about that?
Senator Toby.
I mean, I had a question, too, I wanted to ask.
That was Senator Estes Kefauver. His television appearance would soon skyrocket him into a national political figure. He was presiding officer. As the hearing got underway, the committee tried to establish Frank Costello's influence with local and national politics. In 1948, the State Harness Racing Commission threatened to close Roosevelt Raceway in Long Island because bookmakers were openly operating there. The first witness to involve Costello was George Morton Levy, the head of Roosevelt Raceway.
You testified this morning that you gave Costello the job of kicking your bookies out of the racetrack.
Asking the questions is Senator Charles Toby of New Hampshire.
And you paid him $15,000 a year, a total of $60,000 to date. And you got no report and requested no report, not even a report of progress. And yet you testified that you played on the golf links hundreds of times, and in the course of this epoch of 4 or 5 years of working there, and according to your statement, we understand that you never heard from Costello at all, even the pleasantries and the good fellowship of the golf course, what he was doing, what he was accomplishing. It's a fantastic thing to say that a man, a lawyer, the acumen you must have in your capacity member of the bar, would pay out $60,000 of the coin of the realm to one Costello and expect no report back from him at all and give it to him blindly, fix the price, a liberal payment, I'll say, and never got back any report on how he operated at all. And all you know is that down and kept quiet, you thought the rats must have gone from the racetrack. Is that true?
Well, didn't the condition of the track itself indicate what the report was? If Downing was correct, presumably Costello was doing a good job.
Well, that's by indirection. If I'm putting out $60,000, I'd want to know from the man himself who did the job. What have you done? What did you do for the $60,000?
Well, you might
You had a delayed pass between you and Downing and Costello.
You might be inclined.
You don't spend $60,000 for that kind of information indirectly very often, do you?
I did. I don't spend it. It was only the necessity of the occasion, Senator, which I've explained to you time and time again.
Well, any fair
which, just a moment, please.
My judgment
just a moment.
Say it's fantastic. Put it mildly.
Well, you say it's fantastic.
I do.
I wish you were there at the time and you were in my position. You wouldn't say it.
Well, I wouldn't have paid the $60,000 out the pig in the poke.
What would you have done? Had your license revoked?
No, I wouldn't have drugged either.
You would.
Other ways of getting around those things.
Well, may I
without
ask you,
using Costello.
May I ask you a question,
oh, you
Senator?
You certainly can.
Fine. You're a lawyer, I take it,
no,
Senator?
No, I'm not. No,
oh.
I'm not.
Well, then it's a little difficult to get the answer from you.
Perhaps you can get it better that way.
Well, now, because it's a question of law.
Later, Costello took the stand. He was asked about the $60,000.
Mr. Levy told me that he was having difficulties at the racetrack, the Roosevelt Raceway. He thought that he might lose his franchise, his interests. Bookmakers were there. And the racing commissioner told him that if he didn't clean it up, he might jeopardize his license. He asked me to help him. I said, what way can I help you? He said, can you suggest something? I said, well, haven't you got a detective agency there? He said, I have. I said, well, if they can't help you, how can I help you? He said, well, it seems that there's a lot of complaints. I personally don't think there's any more bookmakers there than any other track, but there's a lot of complaints. I said, there's nothing I can do for you, George. So he said, well, maybe think of something. I said, well, what I can do, George, is I can spread propaganda around that they're hurting you there and you're a nice fellow, and I can tell them that if there's an arrest made, it's going to be very severe. I don't know how much good it's going to do you, but I'll talk about it. He said, I wish you would, and I did.
Rudolph Helley, a lawyer from New York City, is the subcommittee's special counsel. He is asking the questions.
Did you think that your services were worth a total of $60,000 over 4 years?
Which is $15,000 a year. No, I didn't think so.
What did you do in 46 to earn $15,000?
Practically nothing.
And what did you do in the second year that made your services more valuable?
Nothing. Did the same thing I did the first year, and I don't think I did a damn thing.
The committee then went after Costello's personal wealth. It was an attempt to prove that his net worth was more than had been indicated in his federal tax returns. The purpose, prosecution for income tax evasion, which has caught many a notorious criminal when other means failed.
Do you still have the strong box?
Yes.
How much cash do you have in it today?
I wouldn't know.
Do you have over $1,000 in it?
I imagine I have.
Do you have over $10,000 in it?
I wouldn't know.
Is it possible that you have over $10,000 in it?
I wouldn't know.
Why wouldn't you know how much cash you have in your strongbox?
Because I have no occasion to look.
What? You have no occasion to look and see how much cash you have in your strongbox?
I wouldn't know what cash I got in there, Mr. Halley.
Do you have $100,000 in cash in that strongbox?
I said I would not know.
You can't...
Senator Herbert O'Connor of Maryland, the temporary chairman, makes a ruling.
The chair feels it's necessary to advise the witness that any statement he makes is being made under oath and subjects him to a charge of perjury.
New Hampshire Senator Charles Toby.
Mr. Chairman, why not adopt the policy we adopted about a New Jersey policeman out there, sending one of our good men up to his house in his presence, and opening the box and counting the money and getting a certification of it. Get down to brass tacks here. You play ducks and drakes enough with this sort of stuff.
Well, I wouldn't know exactly, but I might have 40 or 50, 55,000 in there. I wouldn't know it.
In other words, is the committee to understand that to the best of your knowledge, the amount of cash that you have in the box is approximately $40,000 or $50,000?
Yes.
All right.
The parade of witnesses includes the hierarchy of the underworld. Their voices and answers are in dramatic contrast with their position in the National Syndicate of Gambling and Crime. The nation's leading bookmaker was reportedly Frank Erickson.
What is your full name?
Rudolph Halley is asking the questions.
Frank Erickson.
And what is your business?
My business? I have no business. I'm in jail.
What was your business prior to being convicted?
I checked on the grounds that might incriminate me.
Were you a bookmaker?
I refused to answer on the grounds that might tend to incriminate me.
Were you educated in the state of New York?
Yes.
You went to the schools of New York?
Yes.
How far did your education progress?
About the fourth grade.
What did you do, Mr. Erickson, on leaving school?
I refused to answer on the grounds that might intend to incriminate me.
Well, Mr. Erickson, did you ever engage in any legitimate occupation?
I refused to answer on the grounds that might intend to incriminate me.
Senator Charles Toby of New Hampshire.
Mr. Erickson, just one question, kindly.
Surely.
If you were lost in the woods somewhere out in the country, and the shades of night were falling fast, and the owls began to hoot, and the eerie sounds of night gathered around you, and you wanted to have somebody lead you away home, would you speak any louder than that, or holler out louder than that?
Well, the last time I spoke to your Senate, I spoke too loud.
Now the stage was set for more drama. Stepping to the witness chair was the glamorous Virginia Hill, a friend of the most notorious underworld names in the country.
Men I was around that gave me things were not gangsters or racketeers or whatever you call these other people. The only time I ever got anything from them was going out and having fun and maybe a few presents. But I happened to go with other fellas. And years I've been going to Mexico, I went with fellas down there. And like a lot of girls, that they've given me things and bought me everything I want. Then when I was with Ben, he paid for everything.
By Ben, you mean Ben Siegel?
Yes.
Ben Siegel, known to the underworld and police as Bugsy Siegel, he was the boyfriend of Virginia Hill. Siegel was murdered in 1949. The crime was never solved.
And he gave me some money, too, and bought me a house in Florida. And then I used to bet horses. They asked me how much. I don't know. I figured whatever was close, I don't know if it's right or it's wrong. I paid income tax on that. That money, I used to save it. When I'm supposed to be out giving these parties, it was fellas that I was going with. They paid for things that I did. I didn't pay for it. If I was paying for it, I wouldn't have gone in the first place. After all, I didn't have to give my own parties, I don't think.
Well, the committee has been a little troubled because you've lived very well and you apparently have been able to simply say what you think you earned in a rough, round figure without giving details and don't seem to have the trouble of accounting to Uncle Sam the way the rest of us
do.
Well,
then he'll have to take care of that, won't he?
Uncle Sam?
Yeah.
Well, maybe he will.
Well,
perhaps
that's all
he should.
Right. Well, sure. I don't blame him.
Virginia Hill moved in the circle that involved itself with honest citizens and the underworld. She was asked about her many associations.
You say you knew Alan Smiley. Did you know Solly Soloway?
Ben's brother-in-law? Sure, I knew Solly.
You knew him pretty well?
Well, I used to go to the house a lot with Ben.
What was his business?
Well, he worked in Las Vegas.
At the Flamingo?
No, down in one of those other places.
One of the other gambling joints?
Yes.
And Charles Strauss?
I don't know that name.
Del Webb?
I know Del.
You didn't know him?
Yes, I know Del.
Who is he?
He's a contractor.
Is he the one who built the place?
Yes.
How long had you known him before
the
place went up?
I met him through Ben.
You met him through Ben?
Yes.
And did you know William Wilkinson?
Yes.
You don't seem to like him?
I don't like him.
Who is he?
He's a louse.
Frank Costello was called back. He was becoming a reluctant witness. Noticeably hoarse, Costello had attempted to get the committee to give him time to recuperate.
Now, Mr. Costello, did you, hear or read?
Mr. Halley, am I a defendant in this courtroom?
No.
Am I under arrest?
No.
I want to think of my health first. I'm only here as a witness, and I want to protect myself. When I testify, I want to testify truthfully. And I can't, my mind don't function.
Well, you seem to, your mind seems to be functioning pretty well. You seem to be able to understand things pretty well, Mr. Costello.
May I go ahead and ask questions?
All right.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Costello, did you hear the testimony of Mr. Francis McLaughlin yesterday?
Mr. Halley, all due respect to the Senate, which I have an awful lot of respect for, I'm not going to answer another question. You just says I'm not under arrest and I'm going to walk out.
But I want you to understand, if you're contemplating walking out, as you've just put it, or any such act, that this committee is not powerless. The United States Senate has the power to order you arrested and brought physically before the committee to testify. Now, if you're ill, produce a doctor's certificate. Produce an affidavit of a doctor. If you're not ill, testify.
Is it just a sore throat? Is that his difficulty? Or?
I don't know.
He seems to be able to talk very well.
I think it's his gallbladder.
Tom.
Finally, he was asked about his interest in politics.
As I said before, I've had my experience at 43. Where, believe it or not, I've met these people, had drinks with them, but I absolutely divorced myself from any participating in politics.
Well, you've continued to associate very closely with a great many people in politics, haven't you?
Well, I don't know if you call it associate. If I meet them, I'll talk to them, and they talk to me, and we'll have a drink or something.
Well, you had two of them up to your home for Thanksgiving dinner last Thanksgiving, didn't you?
Well, I've known them folks for over 30 years.
And,
But we never spoke politics.
What else do district leaders talk but politics?
Well, I don't know. Don't you know any of them?
Doesn't the talk invariably go to politics?
Well, if they do, I don't pay no attention to them.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't think I ever met any one of them. Except Carmen DeSapio, whom I have met recently, when he came up here. I don't think I know any of them. To answer your question, not one.
I believe you may be better off.